Hey there, welcome back to the show that helps you level up your poker game fast. I'm Mike Brady, joined by poker pro and all-around top bloke, Gary Blackwood.
What's up, guys and girls? Thank you very much for joining. Today we're going to do the opposite of what we did last week. We spoke about when to bet small. This week it's when to bet big.
That's right. If you are a player who rarely bets big on the flop and turn, you are leaving tons of money on the table. Betting big in the right spots allows you to juice pots with strong hands and superior ranges when you have them, and that's how you maximize value and stack your opponents. This is a follow-up to our last episode, as Gary just said, which was all about when to bet small. You might want to go back and listen to that one first, but you don't have to necessarily. So let's start out with a general question. Mr. Blackwood, how do you think about big bets generally?
Really easy. I absolutely love them when it's me that's doing the big betting, and I hate them when it's my opponent that's doing the big betting. Just very quickly, what you said about how important this strategy is in the intro is 100% correct. There are a lot of players out there listening to this that will be betting one third on a board like 8-5-3 out of position in a three bet pot. And that is something that needs to be eradicated immediately, because as we're going to discuss, there are a lot of spots where you need to be betting big, and we'll cover the various reasons, but it is one of the biggest leaks that people have. Case in point, say you're on the button with king-queen offsuit, you open the small blind 3-bet, you call, flop is 9-5 deuce rainbow. If the small blind bets one third, it's a really easy decision for you to call there, given the small bet size. If he bets 75%, however, it feels really close. You're in a really uncomfortable spot. And that goes for a lot of hands that you have here, not just king-queen. You're going to have hands like king-jack, ace-four, pocket-sixes, all those types of hands that are really happy to call versus a one-third bet size. But versus a 75% bet size, put you into a really difficult spot. Put simply, knowing when to use big bets and using them properly can make the game really hard for your opponent. And if you only have small bets, you're making the game far too easy for them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time people will maybe even think they're betting big when they're not. You know, they might be thinking, you know, a 50% or 60% bet is big on a certain board, but that board actually warrants an even bigger bet, maybe even a 75 pot size bet, maybe even over bet on certain boards, right? So, you know, I guess that's kind of bringing us to our next sort of subtopic here. So before getting into specific hand examples and strategies, I think we should define big bets so everyone is on the same page. So when you say big bet, what exactly do you mean in terms of percent of pot?
So generally, 75% will be considered a big bet in a three-bet pot, and you won't really ever overbet on the flop in a three-bet pot. But there are also some spots where we want to bet 133% pot in a single-raise pot, and we'll take a look at those spots. And more importantly, we'll talk about why we want to have huge bets in a moment. Remember, working out why we do something is far more important than just implementing the thing itself. What I mean by that is, if I tell you to bet 75% on 8-5-3 rainbow small blind versus button 3-bet pot, implementing that is all well and good. But once you understand why you want to do that, why the solver wants to bet big, then poker becomes very easy. So the why is just as important as implementing the thing itself.
Yeah, and I think the why will help you figure out other situations to do it, right? Like if you know why you're betting big on X board, it doesn't really matter. You're going to be better equipped to identify the next board that warrants that same big bet, or why another board is different and doesn't warrant that big bet. So we are going to get into why right now. So what are the factors that make you want to bet big?
So a couple of different factors depending on the scenario, but there are things that we must take into consideration, like the nut advantage, the board connectivity, the position that we're in, whether we're in position, out of position, small blind versus under the gun, and so on and so forth. And how good or bad the board is for our range. Really excited to break down some of the concepts in just a moment, but the specifics of when to bet big are really important, and we need to be 100% sure we're getting the intricate details correct and we're not mixing these examples up. There are a whole bunch of different really fine details that change everything in terms of when we want to bet, you know, small, middling, or large, and it's really important that we're confident that we're implementing the strategy correctly before we go ahead and do so.
All right, good stuff. Time for some specific examples, I think. What are the most common situations in which our listeners should tend to bet big?
So let's talk about single raise pots first. When solvers first came around, we would just see bet 33% on a board like ace-queen-four or ace-eight-three with our entire range. And nobody really knew how to use the solver because the game has evolved so much since then to the point that this is now a relatively obsolete strategy. In single raise pots, we find more really big bets going in on the boards that where we have a significant nut advantage. For example, if you open the button and the big blind calls, you'll find that any ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10 board actually favors an overbet C bet for 133% on the flop. And this is because the big blind is supposed to three bet so much. Ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10 suited, all those types of combos the big blind is supposed to three bet, and therefore they don't call, which means their calling range doesn't contain any, you know, really strong two pairs, etc. And your nut advantage becomes so significant that you want to press that nut advantage so you can play for stacks by the river. And if we think about that, the pot is really small in a single race pot. You know, we open the button, the big blind calls, there's 5.5 big blinds in there. You can't bet flop for one third, bet turn, and then shove river for, you know, 7-8x pot. It just doesn't work like that. So your nut advantage is so significant that you want to overbet the flop so that you have the option to play for stacks by the river, and it's much more comfortable to do so. The last thing I want to say, and this is really important, I'm going to give you three types of boards here. You've got ace king 6, ace king 10, and ace king king. You only have a really significant nut advantage on ace king 6, because on ace king 10, your opponent's got tons of queen jack offsuit. Obviously, you've got more really strong hands there, but it's a somewhat middling nut advantage. Whereas obviously on ace king 6, you've got aces, kings, ace king, your opponent just doesn't have those. Ace king 10, your opponent's got plenty of queen jack that can call, and on ace king king, obviously your opponent's got king deuce, king 3, king 4, and so on and so forth. So it's really important we understand the big difference between ace king 6, ace king 10, and ace king king.
Yeah, and if we kind of flip this around and think about the situation that our opponent is going to be in, if we're implementing this equilibrium strategy where we bomb the flop, bomb the turn, and potentially shove or at least bet very big on the river, on ace king 6, suppose the board runs out, you know, turn 7, river deuce, so just total brick run out. They're going to be in a really, really nasty spot with every hand in their range, except for specifically pocket sixes, maybe some turn two pairs or something, right? Pocket sixes being a flopped set. So that's a really difficult situation for them. And it's going to be hard for them to call with the right amount of hands, and that's going to allow us to bluff effectively as well. So not only are we going to get a bunch of money in with our strong hands and potentially stack them, we're going to be able to bluff effectively with, you know, the appropriate range. Hopefully we're finding those bluffs. That's quite an important part of implementing such a strategy. But then compare that to the other two boards you talked about. Let's take ace, king, 10. If you bomb the flop, bomb the turn, shove the river, they can just fold everything except for queen jack pretty much. Like, you make their life very, very easy. They called out of the big blind. They have all 12 combos of queen jack offsuit. And then they might even have the queen jack suited combos. They're actually supposed to three bet those at least sometimes. But a lot of people don't. I know we've all played with people who don't really 3-bet out of the big blind with anything but like big pairs and ace-king or whatever. So that means there's going to be 16 combos of queen-jack in their range on the ace-king-10 board. So if you like 1.5x pot the flop, same on the turn, shove the river, they're just like, LOL, I fold with everything except for queen-jack. They might not even realize they're exploiting you on accident in that way, but that's what would happen. Like, you're making their life quite easy. Comparatively, on that ace king six board, their life is anything but easy on most runouts. Same goes for the ace king king board. You know, when they have a king, they're going to call you down. Pretty simple. You know, it doesn't really make their life all that hard. They can just kind of fold ace x on the river, maybe even on the turn to your big bet, because, you know, it's not that strong of a hand and they have plenty of king x in their range. So really think about, you know, the situation your opponent's going to be in. And one other thing I kind of want to add is, you might want to make some exploitative adjustments here. Like, for example, if you're up against someone who you know just doesn't have the heart to call you down with marginal hands, you know, like, and by marginal hands, I mean what sort of a recreational player is just going to identify as a marginal hand. I only have one pair marginal hand, you know, even if it's ace jack on ace king six, one of the best hands they can have. You know, if you're up against one of those opponents, maybe you're playing low stakes live, low stakes online, and you kind of know they're not someone who's going to be capable of calling you down, you might even want to implement a very exploitable strategy yourself where you do the big betting, but more so with the bluffs, and maybe you size down a little bit with the strong hands because you know they're going to overfold versus the big bets and they're going to, you know, still call the smaller bets. So when you have it, you know, you can go 75% pot on the river instead of the overbet jam to kind of extract that value. And I think a lot of people listening will have been up against players like that and will kind of know what I'm talking about. Just make sure you have solid evidence that you're up against one of those players. Don't just assume, oh, I'm playing 1-3 live, all of my opponents are like this. We don't want you to think like that. But if you have solid evidence to think I can get away with this really exploitative strategy, go for it. If you know what your opponents are doing, you should take advantage of it. That's how poker works. generally speaking on this podcast, I've said it time and time again, we're talking about poker at equilibrium. This is a computer playing against a computer, or a top player playing against another top player. This is the kind of stuff that happens in 100K high rollers with, you know, Nick Petrangelo and like some other crusher battling it out. But if you're playing 1-3 live, you don't necessarily have to, you know, play that computery. You can use your gut and make some sweet adjustments that allow you to increase your win rate even more compared to this equilibrium strategy that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's two things I want to quickly talk about. First thing, you mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, and it's absolutely right. It is, you know, this strategy we're talking about, you know, you ace king six, you bet really big on the flop, like you overbet the flop and then you overbet the turn. It is a nightmare to play against. If you're in the big blind and you call with ace deuce suited and you're facing a 133% flop C bet, you're already in a horrible spot. You know what's coming on the turn, and the solver will start to fold some top pairs. If you bet 133% pot on the flop on ace king six, the big blind is supposed to fold some king X, and that's kind of crazy. You know, you flop a pair and you're being forced to fold it, and then you're being forced to fold top pair on the turn as well. And I think that really, you know, what I've just spoken about, it really ties in nicely with what Mike has just said. Once you kind of understand the theory, you can know how to exploit players. For example, if you know that your opponent is going to fold top pair, their ace deuce on ace king 6-8, if you bomb the flop and bomb the turn, then go ahead and do that with your bluffs. But if you've got a value hand and you really don't want this guy to fold top pair, you can kind of size down a little bit. But I want to reiterate that point: you can't deviate from the theory until you have a solid understanding of what the theory is. So really important, you know, we're making adjustments, but we kind of understand what's going on first of all.
Yeah, for sure. And I think an interesting subtopic here, so we're talking about how the big blind ends up folding hands like middle pair on the flop and, you know, top pair on the turn, which they'd never dream about doing if you're doing the typical third or 50% or 70% pot size bets. It's these overbets that allow that to happen, and that's why the solver chooses to do them. But something that I've always found interesting is how the solver chooses its bluffs as the button. So the value range is obvious, right? You have ace queen as maybe the bottom of your value range, and then you have a set of sixes, a set of kings, a set of aces. Again, we're talking about ace king six board. Ace king, ace six, king six, right? That's basically your value range that you're just bombing, shoving river. But what do the bluffs look like? Obviously, we have some gut shots, but, you know, like the queen 10, jack 10s of the world. But I know there's some unintuitive bluffs that the solver finds. Can you speak a little bit to those?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We've got some natural bluffs. We're going to have some gut shots. If we've turned a flush draw, some, you know, ace king, 6-8, we can have a hand like 9-7, which is turned a straight draw. One of the really unintuitive bluffs that we have here, and it makes a lot of sense: ace king 6-8, for example, your opponent is supposed to fold ace deuce, ace 3, ace 4, etc. You want to block their continues, and their continues are turned two pairs. So on ace king 6-8, you actually really like to blast in with hands like 10-8 and jack 8 and 9-8 and stuff like that, because you want to block your opponent's turn two pairs. So you kind of turn your turn third pairs into a bluff to go along with your queen 10, jack 10, and those turned equity draws as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just blockers. You have a little bit of equity with those hands too, right? You can bang off another 8 on the river, hit your backdoor trips draw, and now you have a hand worth value betting. You can river your own 2 pair, although that said, it will get a little sticky when the pot's that big and you river like the queen 8 2 pair or whatever. And then I think the solver will even use some like flopped bottom pairs in this line too, right? Like if it has like 6, you have like 6-5 suited and you bet the flop and the turn's an 8 or whatever. So you have that 6, therefore you block A6, King 6, and the turn 2 pair 6-8, which they could potentially have. They might fold that on the flop versus your big bet. But the point is, there's some really unintuitive bluffs that the solver finds here, and it's important that we as humans find them, because if we're just blasting for these big bets on the flop, turn, and river with just those really strong hands, and then the handful of gut shots and natural bluffs that we have in our range, we're actually not going to be bluffing enough. And then the fact that they're overfolding works out for them. Again, I like to use this phrase, accidentally exploiting us. So you do kind of have to make sure you're finding these unintuitive bluffs and turned pairs and flopped pairs that have maybe a little bit of showdown value, but really don't. I guess the way I think about it is their blocker value and their value as like a triple barrel bluff outweighs the showdown value that they have, because they have just a little tiny bit of showdown value. So yeah, really think about your hand sometimes. Like, I know it's easy to kind of get into showdown value mode when you flop bottom pair or whatever, or maybe, you know, bet the flop and then go into showdown value mode. But consider, wait, actually, is this a sweet bluff spot? Am I going to get him to fold a bunch of top pairs, a bunch of middle pairs, if I barrel this hand? The answer is often yes. And the key thing is, you block those two pairs that they can have, so you're not going to get called down as often. So it's really works out from a bunch of different angles.
Yeah, and there's one last tangent of a tangent of a tangent that I want to go off on here. Very, very quickly, as Mike said, you know, on ace, king, 6-8, as mentioned, a hand like jack 8 is really nice because you block those turn 2 pairs. But Mike is absolutely right. There are certain scenarios where you would like to use your bottom pair as a bluff. And this is, you know, really quite cool if we think about this. On ace, king, 6, if we bet 1/3, our opponent is always supposed to raise pocket 6s. If we overbet, our opponent is not very often going to raise pocket 6s. And the reason for that is, as mentioned in a previous podcast when we spoke about check raising, when you face bigger bets, your check raising range is the same, but the frequency comes down. So when you face smaller bets, obviously the frequency goes up. When you face an overbet, your range is the same that wants to check raise, but the frequency comes really far down. So therefore, our opponent is going to have more bottom sets in their range than they normally would on ace, king, 6, which is why 7-6, 6-5, 6-4 at some frequency are really good bluffs, because we block our opponent's sets. On the flip side, if we, you know, were to bet small on this board, having a 6 would be a really bad bluff, because then we're blocking hands like 7-6 suited, 6-5 suited, and we don't really block any sets. So that's a little complicated to wrap your head around, but, you know, it's really solid advice, and it's a really nice insight into, you know, a small bet and that drastically changes everything versus a big bet that drastically changes everything. And the last thing I want to quickly say is Mike is absolutely right. It might feel really weird turning third pair into a bluff, but if you think about it, it's one of your best bluffs. And when you start to implement it in the right spots, you'll immediately see just how excellent it is and how effective it is. So don't be put off by, you know, I've turned a pair here, I'm going to start to check. In some situations where you bomb the flop and you block those turn two pairs, it's a really, really good bluff for you to have. And it's really important that we're brave in a sense and we implement that bluff.
So let's move on to 3-bet pots. I know a lot of this stuff, if basically none of it, applies in 3-bet pots because, as we talked about in the last episode about small betting, the pot is already big, right? You 3-bet preflop, maybe you made it 10 or 12 or whatever blinds. So there's like 20 to 25 blinds in there. Unless you're very deep, you're not really going to have to bet big to get the money in by the river. So can you speak to that kind of, you know, situation where the pot is already big and, you know, your bet sizing is going to be impacted by that?
Yeah, and it's a good thing we mentioned that, because we wouldn't want our listeners to go away and start, you know, overbetting the flop in 3-bet pots on ace, king, 6 and stuff like that. So what we've just spoken about, really good advice, really solid, but I want to reiterate that point. It only applies in single raise pots. You know, you want to bomb the flop because you want to bloat the pot. Obviously, in a 3-bet pot, the pot is already big. You don't have to bomb the flop to be able to play for stacks unless, as Mike says, you know, you're playing 600 big blinds deep in a live game or something like that. You can bet small on the flop, you can bet the turn, and you can shove the river. A lot of the time you can shove the river for like 70% pot, and that's a really nice sweet spot to have there. But there are some instances in 3-bet pots where we want to bet big, and it's kind of the opposite of a single raise pot. So we're doing so well on ace, king, 6, we want to bomb it. In a 3-bet pot, it's kind of the other way around. We want to use the bigger bet sizes on boards that we're not doing very well on, and when we're out of position as well. So for example, the button opens, we 3-bet in the small blind, and the button calls. There are boards that we're doing really well on. Single Broadway boards, ace high boards, king, queen, 4, double Broadway, all those great boards. 10 high boards we're kind of doing okay-ish on, and we like to use a 50% bet size in a lot of scenarios. But 8 high boards and below, we're not doing that great on anymore. And you can, you know, use a solver and see the equity on something like king, 6-3 is really good for the small blind. On 8-4 deuce, it's really middling. And there are some scenarios where the button is actually doing better than the small blind. So on these boards where you're not doing that well, and obviously your sizing goes up and your betting frequency comes down, king, 6-3, you can bet close to your entire range, 7-4 deuce, nowhere near as much. Two nice rules of thumb in this spot. Firstly, you can use the big bet size on any 8 high and below flop that is not monotone or paired. Really important that we mention that. And secondly, the more connected the board, the more you check. For example, on 8-7 deuce, if you're using a 75% bet size, we bet around about 50% of the time. It's not that connected. Yes, it is 8 high, but it's not that connected. But on a board like 6-5-4, you're supposed to check virtually your entire range. On a board like 5-4 deuce, you're supposed to check 75 to 80% of the time. So the more connected the flop, the more you check. And the last tangent I want to go off, we've had a lot of these today, Any scenario, not related to this specific spot, but any scenario in the game of poker where we're the preflop aggressor and we have a high check frequency, we need to back that up with a high check raise frequency. So on a board like 8-7 deuce, we're supposed to check 50% of the time. We've got lots of really strong hands in our range. We want to be throwing out a check raise from time to time with a hand like pocket eights, a hand like 8-7 suited if we three bet it, a hand like aces or kings if we decided to check those on the flop. And we've got loads of nice bluffs to balance it with, hands like 10-9, jack-9, even a hand like king-queen with a backdoor flush draw with the two really high cards. Really nice for us to check raise with that as well.
Yeah, that part where you talk about those two rules, I think was, if I had to pick, well, two things for our listeners to take away from this one, I would say it's those two rules. So you said, firstly, you can use the big bet size on any 8-high board and below that is not monotote or paired. Again, we're talking about 3-bet pots. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Because on 8-7 deuce, there's not so many hands that your opponent who called your 3-bet can have that smash that board. They can have the sets, sure, maybe 8-7 suited, but that's it as far as what beats your overpairs. But if you switch it to, say, 8-5-5, now they have some fives in their range, like some 5-6 suited, ace-5 suited maybe, you know, stuff like that. So the nut advantage is at least closer, if not even in their corner. And then monotone boards, we've talked about a lot. I mean, it's a flush game on monotone boards, so your overpairs are, I don't want to say dust, but they've shriveled up a lot on, you know, a monotone board, especially when you don't have that suit. So when you're playing the flush game, which you always are on a monotone board, you just got to be a lot more passive and defensive with your range. And kind of same goes for those paired boards, just less so. And then that second one, this is one that I find comes up a lot. When you have a very connected board, you're going to have a better time if you start with a check. 6-5-4, you know, even if it's rainbow, you say you 3-bet out of the small blind, your opponent opened from the cutoff and now calls. Do you really want to be like juicing the pot up with like kings on 6-5-4 when, you know, like a quarter or a little more of the deck makes a four card straight, and then, you know, they can have all the sets that you maybe can't have as often. They can have more of the straights, more two pairs. Like, they're just whacking you in the nut advantage. You do have more over pairs, and I think overall you have still a range advantage on those boards, right, as the three better.
On some of them. Some of them are more favorable for the in position player, but some of them you do still have a slight equity advantage, shall we say, on the low connected boards.
Right, but even if you do have that slight equity advantage, it just does not matter because of how deficient your range is for super strong hands and how sort of robust their range is when it comes to super strong hands. So you just have to play really defensive, and that means you're going to check a lot of hands that missed. That means you're going to check a lot of medium strength hands. And then to protect all of that, you're going to have to check some overpairs. You're going to have to check the few sets and straights that you have. You're going to have to check some two pairs that you have. Like, you really just have to protect your whole range, start with a check, then see what happens. You know, maybe they bet and then you implement some check raises. Maybe they check back and now, you know, you're playing on the turn and you kind of reevaluate based on what comes. That's kind of, you know, a very, very important thing that I think people are going to deal with a lot, because sometimes you three bet with an overpair and the flop looks a little bit ugly and you kind of don't know what to do. And, you know, we're giving you permission to start with a check and not worry about, you know, protecting your overpair. You know, I think a lot of people have the logic, you know, you three bet out of the small blind, the flop comes, you know, 6-7-8, and you have aces and you're like, oh, I have to bet because I don't want a 10 to come on the turn. I need to protect my hand. But if you really think about that, are you protecting your hand by betting? Not really, because if the turn's going to come a 10, and that's a 10 that gives them a better hand, maybe they have like pocket nines, or maybe they have 10-8 suited, so they turn two pair on the 10, they're calling your bet with all those hands. So all you're actually doing is juicing the pot for when those bad cards come on the turn. You're not protecting anything. Like, sure, you might get like a low straight draw to fold sometimes or something like that, so you protect against a handful of hands. But for the most part, every hand that bangs off a card on the turn that you don't want to see is one that was going to call a flop bet anyway. So just keep the pot smaller, start with a check. You're going to have a better time. I'm thinking of that South Park meme right now. You're going to have a bad time if you're betting too much on 8-7-6 out of position or 9-7-8 out of position. Like, those spots can get really, really dicey if you bet the flop, especially if you bet big.
100%. 100%.
All right, that's all we've got for you on big bet sizes. If you want to learn more about big bet sizes in general, I highly recommend checking out the Upswing Lab. Gary has a module coming out very soon that's all about nut advantage versus range advantage. And there's other modules in the lab that will help you with overbetting and identifying spots to big bet as well. I think Ryan Riske even has a module about betting big on the flop specifically. So that would be a really, really good one. Ryan Risk is a great player, really good teaching style. So I highly recommend checking that out in the lab. If you want to learn more about this, you can use coupon code LEVELUP to get $50 off the Upswing Lab. Go check it out on upswingpoker.com. If you enjoyed the show, please do us a favor and hit the like button if you're watching on YouTube, or rate the podcast 5 stars if you're listening on an audio platform. It only takes a moment and it helps us out a lot. And if you want to get notified when future episodes come out, hit the subscribe or follow button. Also, a quick reminder that the $40 million duo of Darren Elias and Nick Petrangelo are releasing a new tournament course on Upswing Poker in May. It's looking like it's going to be May 8th. It's called Road to Victory, the Ultimate Tournament Course, and it's a certified banger that no tournament player should miss. You can sign up to get notified when Road to Victory comes out over on upswingpoker.com. Just scroll over the training tab and you'll see it in the menu. You can get some free value from Darren Elias right now over on the Upswing Poker YouTube channel. He's released a couple of videos that give you a good idea of his teaching style, so you can decide if the course is right for you. The first one is about Tom Dwan, so just look for a video with Tom Dwan's face in there from recently on Upswing Poker. Somewhere in mid-May, or mid-April rather, or so, is when it came out of 2023. Maybe some people are listening to this in the future. So yeah, that's it for now. See you next week when we cover a fun topic, ace-high boards. Take care.